Hey everybody, Repco Supercars Weekly, Aaron Noonan with you with our weekly look at all things Repco Supercars Championship Racing. On the weekend, the Bend Motorsport Park in South Australia was a corker if you're a Ford fan. Three different wins from three different teams. Mustang Mounted is what I was trying to say. Greg Murphy, another M just to confuse me on a Tuesday as I trip over my words. Welcome to you, Murph. I thoroughly enjoyed the weekend of racing. I thought the racing was really good. Shane Van Gisbergen, top point scorer, but no one really paid attention to that, given that the Fords struck back at the Bend with three different winners from the three races. I thought it was good stuff.
Yeah, I thought, mate, couldn't agree more. I was incredibly entertained, and we're always entertained when we get different winners and new names at the top and adding to the winners list for 2021. The Ford guys, they've been struggling to get those runs on the board, and did they come back with a vengeance at a very, very tricky the Bend race circuit, because it's a fantastic race circuit, but it's got some amazing corners that are very difficult to string together. And the conditions, again, Saturday conditions, the weather there also played a part. And we love it when there's a bit of moisture around. We love it as a spectator and watching from the sidelines, not so much as race drivers necessarily, but to see the performance of those three blokes, Andre Heimgartner, Anton De Pasquale, and Cam Waters, you know, come back after a very challenging weekend again for him. To get another win at the Bend, where he got his first one the other, well, one of his wins last, sorry, his only win last year. He got there late last year. It was great to see him back on the top step of the podium again, getting some points.
Now, one of the things that caught our eye was that not just those three different winners, but three different teams, and that means that we've had six different race winners from the last six races, obviously counting Van Gisbergen with his last of his wins of his streak.
Yep.
First time since 2018 that we've had six different winners in a row. But do you know what the record is for most different winners in a row? We didn't. We had to look this up, but I thought I'd give you a chance to have a guess.
Now, I don't think it was that long ago. Didn't we get nine?
We got nine. You are going to the top of the Repco Supercars Weekly class in 2013, the very first year.
Yeah,
of Car of the Future, from race 19 in Darwin to race 27 at Winton, nine different winners: Lowndes, Davison, Tander, Wincup, McLaughlin, Mostert, Moffat in the Nissan, Winterbottom, and James Courtney.
There you go.
Rounded out that streak. So I'm not sure we've got too many drivers left capable of winning races in the next three to be able to match that. Will Davison is one of them for sure.
Yep.
We probably need another lucky one or two to get up there in the mix to be able to match that record. But nevertheless, it's been a different case of two halves. First half of the season so far of what we've had, Van Gisbergen clean sweeping, and then it's been a nice mixture between everybody else. Talk to me too about Andre Heimgartner, young Kiwi who was this close, and well, no one can see me doing my fingers here, but very close together. He was so close to not being in supercar racing. Gets an opportunity. Todd Kelly retires. Now he's a race winner. He's been knocking on the door of this for quite some time, but that wasn't one of those fluky ones, right place, right time. That was dominant. That was fast. That was what we've thought was capable from he and that team. And it looks like with the Groves there now, they've got that added investment, bit more pep in the step. They could become a good player in this championship.
Yeah, and I really hope so. That formation of this new name, this new team, Kelly Grove Racing, that investment, the Grove family getting involved there, Brenton and Steve. You know, they have the ability, the resource to really support an operation which we've seen for a long time, sort of knocking on the door, but just not being able to actually put it all together. And a driver like Andre, who, as you say, has been on the cusp. He's been on the cusp of leaving the sport, but his ability has been noted, I think, on many times. And I've seen him, you know, over the years come through. I saw him when he, you know, started to kick off in Super Tourers back in 2012, and the speed and the skills that he was showing back there. He's one of those guys that's fortunately for all of us and for him managed to meander his way, find his way through the myriad of things that can happen in motorsport and that can put you out of motorsport, and just managed to obviously be in the right place at the right time to have that opportunity to showcase what he's got. There's lots that don't get that chance, as we know, and it's great that he has, because he's proven that he's worthy to be have longevity in supercars in the future. So really, really happy for him. It was just awesome to see the young guy. I mean, I've watched him, as I say, for a long time. You see what he did at the New Zealand Grand Prix earlier in the year. Hadn't driven a single seater for donkey's years, hardly spent any time in them at all. And just the reaction to how he got to be so fast in that car over that weekend, you know, just highlights again someone like him and his ability. So, yeah, just stoked for him.
It moves him now, Murph, to eighth in the points in terms of the championship, 11 races down. Quick recap, Shane McGisbergen still leads the way, 11-12, back to Jamie Wincup on 9.22, Chas Mostert third on 8.66. Bit of an up-and-down weekend from Chas. He did not seem himself. Watching numerous interviews on the weekend with him, the bright, smiley, chatty, witty Chas was not there at the Bend on the weekend, and it wasn't just because of that crash that took him out of one of those races on Sunday. There was something going on that I wasn't quite up to speed with, or wasn't quite prominent or known in Chaz's demeanour on the weekend. Yep. He half brushed Chad Daylon in a couple of interviews, so I'm not quite sure whether he was just having a bad weekend off the track or what was going on there, but it wasn't the usual Chaz that we've come to know and love. But he's still third in the championship. He's still in the game big time, even though he had that zero on the first race on Sunday. Will Davison has been the quiet achiever, hasn't won yet, but got closer on the weekend, part of a 1-2 for DJR, on the podium a couple of times. He's fourth. He's only 5 points behind Chas Mostert. Waters is fifth, so he's still in the game, even though he dumped points with a zero. Mark Winterbottom, sixth. Stunning stat on the weekend that we fed Team 18. 500 supercars races in a row. He hasn't missed one. He's not had a crash, an engine failure, a car failure, a sickness that's taken him out of the race, back surgery, as some people have had along the way. It's a stonkingly good effort to string 500 races together. Stunning.
Yeah, we continue to throw out, and you continue to put together incredible statistics, and that is definitely one of them. I mean, it's something to be very proud of for Mark Winterbottom. And I sort of, you know, you want to see him, you know, get back to being the Frosty of old too, which we keep in the last little while anyway. I've seen those glimpses of potentially him being back there, you know, right at the front. We saw a pole position last year, didn't we? I think
year before in Tasmania.
Yeah. And there's been other glimpses from Team 18, he's not done in any way, shape, or form, as we know. And it'd be great to see him just find that little bit of edge again that he needs, obviously, to be solid back up the front. You mentioned Will Davison. I've got big raps on him as well. I think he's a brilliant race car driver, and it's awesome that he's been given this opportunity back at DJR to show his wares. And clearly there's a lot to come with those guys, right? I mean, having a DJR 1-2 and a couple of front rows there as well, they've just got so much on offer there. You can sense that it's only just building. And with Anton grabbing a couple of poles and was on, wasn't he? He was on for two race wins. I mean, problem. I mean, to have driven the way he did on the first race on Sunday, which was race 10, I think, wasn't it? To perform the way he did, withstand the pressure that he withstood, all those kinds of things, and just drive so beautifully. I've been a little bit critical, actually, of Anton in the past around just his performance and not really sort of seen, I suppose, the likes of what Mark Larkham and Paul Morris and some of those guys have seen with him. But clearly on the weekend, he has showing to everybody else what those guys, I think, have seen of Anton. And he was just so cool, calm and collected, and his ability to get that car to do what it did, and obviously the work that is now paying off massively between him and Ludo Lacroix. I mean, it's so much intrigue at the moment with the championship, I think. There's so much going on that is, you know, we thought Shane Van Gisbergen was going to dominate and walk away with this whole thing. And all of a sudden, things have just shifted slightly. And we've got all these other guys, Brody Kostecki, the Will Browns, they're all showing such great speed. And I'm just really excited about where the sport is going to head just in the next few race meetings.
I think, Murph, the thing that's really changed the feeling of the championship is the order of the tracks at the start of the year, because Sandown and Simmons Plains, if you look deeply enough, they're Triple Eight tracks. They have been for a very long time. They haven't just won the last little bit there. Yep. They've had huge form there across different car platforms, across different models, across different brands, even in the case of Triple Eight. So if we had a different shuffle of calendar and we had some different tracks at this end of the season, I think we'd see some different results, and we wouldn't quite be at the point where Van Gisbergen has such a margin over Wincup. But we covered through the top 10. So it's Van Gisbergen, Wincup, Mostert, Davison, Waters, Winterbottom, Di Pasquale, seventh. But the thing that kills him in these points, three DNFs now, crash at Bathurst and engine drama at Sandown, another one to Ben. So he's on 648. Van Gisbergen's on 11-12. So he's not far off double the points of Anton. Already. So that's obviously why, that's why Anton would consider himself out of the fight for the championship. Heimgartner, eighth. Nick Percat, ninth. Managed to salvage something from what was looking like a horrible weekend for Brad Jones Racing. And Brody Kostecki, as you mentioned before, has been nice and consistent, is still 10th and hanging in the top 10 of the championship. And if you'd said to me at the start of the year that he'd be 10th in the points and Will Brown would be 14th, two rookie drivers at Erebus, I would have probably thought they'd be a little bit further back in the pack. So I think they've probably achieved higher than external expectations have been, but I don't think that's a surprise to Erebus themselves.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. I rate Brody Kostecki. I know you do, and I think a lot of people do. What he's showing us in such a short time in the game is a real, obviously, X factor kind of understanding and skill in driving a supercar. I suppose I probably gave him the chance personally. I wasn't sure about Erebus as a whole. They've had such a big shift, such a big change from last year to this year that I wasn't really sure if they were going to have everything, all their ducks in a row that they needed to support those guys as well as they have. But they have, and the cars have been fast. The drivers have been doing a great job. You know, they are rookies, so, you know, you're not going to expect them to be that have that consistency, which is king, right? King in supercars being consistent. But I take my hat off to everyone at Erebus and those guys for doing what they've done, and a few different things here and there. And the championship for those two could be very different, right? They could be a lot further up based on just a few bits and pieces here and there. So, you know, that's really exciting for me. And I take my hat off to Barry Ryan and all the team there at Erebus for obviously the effort they're putting in for such a, you know, such a shift and such a change from the end of last year to where we are now. So, and again, that creates massive excitement for me around what's going on. Will Brown's qualifying in some races has been superb, just so good. And Brody's just racking them up there, coming down the inside into turn four or five, whatever it is there on the weekend. And big talking point because he just shoved it in the hole and made it work and upset a few of the stalwarts of the sport. That's just fantastic.
You mentioned Barry Ryan, and I've got to tell our listeners that he is our next sit-down interview on the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. So tomorrow...
Is that R18? One, is that going to be R18?
No. It was very good quality, Gregory. I went and saw Barry in the lead-up to the Ben, spent some time with him at the Erebus workshop in his office. A two-parter. Part one drops tomorrow, part two next Wednesday. We talk about a lot of his journey in motorsport. We talk about, obviously, you worked with him during your time at the Kmart team and later on at Kelly Racing, but how he got into the sport. I think a lot of people in the sport know Barry from the last few years, the documentary with Erebus, the stuff that's been seen, but they don't know the history. They don't know where he's been, where he's come from, and we cover off a lot of that one. So looking forward to that one. So tune into the pod tomorrow. That one drops. And he does talk about the 5-minute penalty at Bathurst. How it happened, why it happened, and who was at fault?
Oh, did he take any responsibility at all? Is that you know, can you give me anything, or am I going to have to listen to the pod?
You're just going to have to listen to the pod, Greg. But he was in very good form, and I think a lot of our listeners will get a very different viewpoint of Barry Ryan when they've listened to those two parts, and probably explains a little bit more important of how he's of how he's wired and why he's wired like that. Because, but I got to say, one of the stories I enjoyed most was that he, and I won't give it away, but and some of our listeners might know a little bit of it, but when you're looking to plan a wedding, be very careful about the dates of Bathurst. Well, that's all I'll say. But he managed to pull off on the same weekend, his first weekend working in V8 Supercars at Bathurst with John Faulkner's team, and his wedding. And you know what? He's still married to Loretta. So it all worked out okay in the end. But how it happened and how he managed to do it on that weekend, private plane, all sorts of stuff, he managed to make it happen.
She is soul of the earth woman, and very, very patient. She is a wonderful, wonderful person. I don't know I don't know where he would be without her, but then a lot of people would say that about me and my wife as well. That's for sure. Well, I think we're very actually true. Quite similar. Barry and I have got a lot of similarities, and that's probably why we get on and like each other, actually, is because we've probably got our fuses, although I reckon my fuse has got a lot longer in the last, little while, whereas I'm not sure if his has, but he's entertainment and love him or hate him, and that's what he is, and he doesn't care because he does the job and he's passionate about what he does, and there's no question about his passion for the sport.
And you will definitely find out about that over the course of the two-part pod, which we only recorded that a week or so ago in the lead-up to the Ben, but a great story of how he came to be at Erebus, his time at Larry Perkins, at Kmart, as a kid, riding motocross bikes and road racing and stuff as well himself. So
very cool.
That's to come tomorrow. We talked about stats and numbers. Congratulations to all the Ford fans around the country. 400 wins in the history of the Australian Touring Car and Supercars Championship. Holden fans are saying, yeah, whatever, we got 500 a few years ago, but still 400 is an amazing achievement. And there's a really cool collector's print that we've put together that's available now to pre-order. It's got all of the 400 wins on it from the different models of Fords across the years, highlights some of the iconic cars, the Dick Johnson True Blue Ford, the Coke Moffat Mustang, the Marcus Ambrose Pertec Falcon, one of your personal favourites, the Scott McLaughlin Shell V-Power Mustang, and all the drivers who've contributed, the top 10 drivers who've contributed to those 400 wins. But I've got a funny feeling Antoine Di Pasquale, although he's at the bottom of the list now with one win, I reckon he's going to squeeze his way up that order over the next couple of years with Dick Johnson Racing. Another thing I wanted to cover off here on Repco Supercars Weekly, Murph, as we record this today, Tuesday, there's a pretty major meeting in Sydney in regards to the future of supercars. And Gen 3, is it on? Is it off? Personal opinion, I cannot see, given that we are in mid-May, if we had to start a new championship in, say, February next year with 24, 25 brand-new cars, engine package, I cannot see how this is going to get to the line and be a success straight up. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's always challenging. And I remember going back, if you go back to, when we started Car of the Future, and that was all happening through 2012 and came into effect in the beginning of 2013. I mean, it was just massive, just such a huge shift for all the teams, having to build new cars and go through that process. And that was a big one. And it's the funding. How do you fund it? So if you remember, the sport, the franchisees sold down their shareholding in the sport, which effectively gave them all a whole lot of cash to be able to go and, start again with brand new cars and start Car of the Future. That's not so simple. They've already sold down a dramatic amount of money, ownership and percentage of the sport. How do they go about now funding that whole process? So I real challenging. I don't have an answer for it all. I think Gen 3 is fantastic. I don't think anyone's denying what that can obviously offer the sport moving forward, just the look of it, reducing costs again. So many parts of it I just think have been done very well. But it's, in the economy that we have and a small fraternity, being able to actually get everybody to end up starting next season with a brand new Gen 3 and with all these other cars that they've got sitting around, that they, would be a big way of generating funding to be able to move them on and sell them, all that kind of stuff. It's just a massive task. And, I wouldn't want to be in the situation of owning a team at the moment, trying to meander my way through that myriad of issues and decisions that need to be made. So it's hard. I don't have an answer, mate, to be honest. It's a big one that we do need, but everyone still needs to be able to afford it and be able to turn up.
Yeah, it's a complex issue. It's got so many different elements that you've got to go through to be able to get to the bottom of it. There's no doubt that Gen 3 is and what's being talked about as what we're going to do is the right way to go, but you've got to implement it right. They've got one shot at this. They can't afford to stuff it up and be late or have, the engine's not quite working right or having, it's the right direction, it's the right pathway, But if it's implemented wrong, it's a disaster. So they've got to do it right. So they might have pause it back here.
You've got to learn from the eras of Car of the Future. And there were, you know, and there were plenty. There were plenty of mistakes that were made, and that we can't afford, obviously, to go down that pathway again, and you know, have the teams, you know, 2-3 years in modifying, changing Gen 3 because it wasn't quite right as well, and just cost. And we know that Car of the Future was very, very expensive, a lot more expensive than what it was supposed to be, and it's unfortunately ended up costing teams all the way through the process more than what they should have. So we've got to create the formula and have the formula foolproof and basically, you know, spot on from the day it's introduced, so that teams know what they got and they're not having to go and you know, spend unnecessarily on things that should have been thought of.
Mm. We'll wait and see in the upcoming, I guess in the next month or so, we'll get a pretty good read on Gen 3 for 2022 and where we're going to be or where we're not going to be or what the state is. Another thing I want to cover off today too, just quickly, Murph, this is a really timely reminder for chaps my age and older, our great mate Neil Crompton. It's been announced that he's been diagnosed with prostate cancer. He's going to have some surgery soon. He was diagnosed in the middle of April, so he's been charging on in the last few rounds of the telecasts. Knowing this news, it is a very big reminder to us all. John Bowes news at the start of the year. Gents, go and get a finger put, you know, where, go and get a blood test. It's very simple. And you can easily get ahead of the curve on this one. This one, if there is one to get and you got to get one, this is the one to get because it's the most manageable, it's the most treatable, it can be beaten, it can be dealt with. And Neil's expected to post-surgery make a full recovery from this, so we're certainly thinking of him. But a timely reminder for us all to look after our health in the middle of a busy lives that we all lead.
It is, mate. Completely well said. I'm an ambassador for Men's Health here in New Zealand, which is coming up in June, actually, Men's Health Week over here. And it's a big part of the messaging that we put out here in New Zealand is around that, men looking after themselves. And, you know, we've got this stigma around being big, tough, I don't need to see a doctor, all this kind of rubbish. And it's time to move on from that kind of bravado, kind of macho kind of deal, which is just a load of bullshit at the end of the day, and look after ourselves because things do go wrong. And one of the fortunate things for me and all my other counterparts and co-drivers and drivers that I've worked with and been with for so long is we have a fairly intricate medical every year for our license. Mm. So it's something that I've taken for granted, always, you know, come to the time of the year where I've got to go get my medical for my racing license and going, oh, what a pain in the butt. But I tell you what, it's been something that subliminally has been such a really important part of my health and moving, you know, moving on and checkups and all that kind of stuff. It has to happen. So I'm forced into having that medical, and I've also got an aviation license, which has a much, much more stringent medical that I get every 2 years as well. And those are things that just happen, and it actually looks after you, gives you a good checkup, gives you a wake-up call potentially, and keeps you in line. And you know, those are the things that I take for granted that are really important. But for most men out there who don't need to go and get one of those, you know, it's a pain in the, as I say, pain in the ass to have to go and do a medical, get a checkup. But at the end of the day, it's potential to highlight issues like you've just mentioned that can be life-saving. So, you know, we've all got to actually put the time, put a little bit of effort in, you know, because what it might find and what it might save is, you know, it's worth living for.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know, and I wouldn't mind betting that this is a scenario Neil might have found himself in. John Bauer, I know, did. Richard Davison, Will's dad, has been through the same scenario where going to do the medical for racing licenses has actually shown up.
Yep.
The increased PSA count that indicates, oh, there's something to look into here. So if you're getting a blood test for some other things, ask them to test for it while they're at it. It's not something that they normally test for, but if you tell them to and add it into whatever you're getting something else tested for, they'll do it. So it's a little bit of a timely reminder. Knowing Neil Crompton, like we know him, he will approach this with the same diligence that he does when he flies his plane, when he comes to a supercars race. He will dot the I's, cross the T's, and do everything possible. So obviously we're wishing him all the best, but we know that he can absolutely deal with this one. But it's a timely reminder for everybody, that's for sure. Now, before we wrap this up, Murph, don't forget Repco Garage. I know you've been clicking over there in New Zealand at repco.co.nz, repco.com.au. here in Australia for the online digital destination for all things automotive and motorsport. The garage itself was at the Bend on the weekend. It will be again, I think it's at Townsville, a bit later in the year. Repco Pong made a debut on the weekend. I've got to have a crack at that next round that I get to when I see that. But speaking of all things Repco, later in the year, Repco Bathurst 1000, the great race at the mountain. There's been a bit of chat floating online in the last few weeks in the wake of Russell Ingall's wildcard entry for Bathurst. Are you a chance to do Bathurst this year? Is this pie in the sky? Could you really make the great race return for the first time in, what, 7 years? Can you confirm, deny, anything in between? What's the story here?
Sorry, Aaron, I think we're breaking up. Couldn't quite hear what you're talking about there. Maybe the internet is crackling and sorry, mate, I missed most of that. Don't know what you're talking about.
Really? So you're not racing?
Listen, there's a very long story and we haven't got time for it, but Peter Addison and I go back a very, very long way. And he essentially gave me probably the big kickstart in Australia that set me up for my future. And he is capable of anything. So just all I can say at the moment is nothing's off the table, as crazy as it may sound, but I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see what he's come up and what bribery and corruption he throws my way and how serious he is. So we're still working on trying to work that one out. But listen, I find it completely insane that after all these years, I could even fathom getting back behind the wheel of a supercar and going and doing a job there. But anyway, if Ingall could do it, I suppose I could.
Oh, okay. We'll keep an eye. You gave me more than I was expecting there. So I am going to get your Bathurst 1000 stats out because I might need them later in the year. You never know.
It won't take you long to find those, mate. That'll be all right.
No. They're floating around here. There's plenty of good numbers tied up into them. Don't forget the Repco Supercars Championship, Murph. Bathurst is coming, but before we get there, Victorian fans get to see them at Winton, the Winton Super Sprint, May 28 to 30. The tickets, we've been getting asked at VH Sleuth a bit lately. The tickets are now on sale. Obviously, with COVID going on, the ticket on sale date is, for a lot of these rounds, quite close to the round itself, and people getting a little bit antsy trying to buy tickets. Jump on the supercars.com website and you can get through to the ticket information for Winton. Of course, camping at Winton is a significant part of it. It's great to go back to the country of Victoria. If you're from Benalla, if you're from Shepparton, Wangaratta, Albury, Wodonga, plenty of BJR fans coming down to see their team hopefully going well. So Winton, May 28-30, it's the next round of the Repco Supercars Championship. As we mentioned before, tomorrow Barry Ryan is our guest on the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. A big sit-down chat with the head of Erebus Motorsport. He spills all about Greg Murphy. No, he doesn't actually. He doesn't spill all about Greg Murphy, but we talk about a whole pile of cool stuff. I didn't ask him about wildcards for Bathurst, but we will get you on in the next few weeks and see where things are at. And see if any of that graft and corruption that you speak about has been able to come to fruition. And we might just see Murph back at the mountain in October. Even if you're not driving, we've got the bubble open now. So will you be at Bathurst regardless? Regardless, you'll be there.
I will be at Bathurst regardless of anything. Part of the plan is to come and support my mates in the television side of supercars and have a bit of a play with them. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be great to get back. And I'm actually looking forward to getting on an international flight. I haven't said that ever. So that'll be quite cool.
Your passport has plenty of dust on it in the drawer, I'm sure. I look forward to you getting that
actually,
out.
I need to find it. I don't even know where it is. I've lost it.
You better find it. You might need it. Greg Murphy, thanks again for joining us on Repco Supercars Weekly. Great insight. Great to look back at the Bend. We look forward to Winton. We look forward to seeing what's going to happen with Gen 3. And we look forward to seeing what's going to happen with you in October.